Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, good morning, Jay.
How's it going?
Great, man. Good to be with you on this crisp October morning.
Crisp?
Yeah, it's like an actual fall morning this morning.
Wait, are you complaining about how hot it's been?
Not at all. I've loved all the weather. Jeff. I like it all. I'm ready for the snow, man. Bring it. But no, I walked out this morning and I was like, okay, I need a hoodie today. This is like the first day that I felt that for a while.
That's true. I do. I love 60s in the fall.
As do I.
And especially when the sun's out.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day. I don't think we have any other banter. Mm-mm. People are going to be so disappointed. I have nothing to say to you.
I have nothing to say to you.
Oh, all right. Well, we should just wrap it up. That's basically
we should clarify.
That's going to be the title of the podcast.
What we meant by that was we have nothing to say that's not important.
I know we got it. Well, let's just jump in.
Let's do it.
Because there was some confusion from the message on Sunday.
Let's clear it up.
We should clear it
up. So the topic was, just a reminder for everyone, the topic, we went from marriage and sex to money.
Yeah.
And so we had some intense topics here that do hit close to our hearts and that are heavily, I mean, these are ones that Jesus talks about a lot in the Gospels as well. But yeah, so Jay preached on, what verse was that? Verse 5?
Yep,
yeah, five and 6.
5 and 6.
Hebrews 13, 5 and 6 about, it says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. And then this promise of God's faithfulness to us and him being our provider and our caretaker all the time. So what do you feel like is the most important thing you want to clear up just right from the get-go in case people only make it 5 minutes in?
Right. Well, this is the fun part, is that they probably already skipped 5 minutes in thinking that we were doing the banter. And so, yeah, the thing, I got a question after the service, and I like with any of these, we don't know when I get a question, I wonder if other people had that question, because that's pretty common for every person that says, hey, help me understand this better. There's probably, you know, 5 or 10 more people who also were wondering that. So this is in case that is the case. So in the section where I was talking about ways that we try to have this idol coexist with God, I was making the point that most of us in that room are not like overtly greedy or overtly worshiping money in some way that everybody would look at and say, well, holy cow, you're worshiping money. So it's kind of skipping past that. So, and then I went and talked about debt and saving and just ways that we kind of cover up our idolatry. And the way we cover up idolatry in any way is by creating a law. So think about how the Pharisees did that. It's they aren't actually loving God, but they're obeying the laws that are put there that facilitate loving God. So worshiping, obeying the Sabbath, things like that. And so in the same way with money, we can kind of do that. And so obviously, if you're in a situation where you are habitually getting into consumer debt and digging deeper and deeper and buying more things, hoping that that will fulfill you, or being really miserly, you know, or anything like that, where you're just like, all I care about is money, that is sinful. So, you know, or like not saving at all. So I mentioned those couple of things. I said, you know, saving and confusing being frugal with being faithful. And then the other of, what was it? Oh, paying cash, kind of the idol of paying cash. And so my point was not don't pay cash. And my point was not don't save. My point was that sometimes what happens is in the act of doing a thing that externally looks like a good and faithful thing, because we should save, we should have money in reserves because wild things happen and we should have savings, and it is good to pay cash for things. We shouldn't go into debt, especially consumer debt. That's unwise. But what we do is we end up creating a new law that says, well, I know that I have chosen God over money because I have a good savings account, I'm wise with my money, and I pay cash for things. And what I wanted to do was just kind of take the veil off of that and reveal that and just say, just because you do that doesn't mean that you've actually killed this idol. And in fact, the law, creating a law like that, can be a cover for that idolatry to grow.
Yeah, it can masquerade, right, as something that it's not. And I love the contrast you made, like, I think with the pay cash idol in particular. I think that's what, when you said this, but you said pay cash idol ends up being about debt avoidance, not generosity. And that, I think, is such a good, that's a good contrast, because the goal is generosity. It's a heart that is overflowing with, I want to bless other people in my life. I want to help them. And you can be paying with cash all the time, and that could, like, be non-existent in you. And I think those are really important, like, insights, because there are ways in which we just culturally, and like where we live, for example, we might really fit in, but really be missing it, missing what Jesus calls us to, the deeper and better thing. Because I think that would be culturally, even outside the church, a pretty common way of handling money in our area. It's not uncommon to want to be frugal, to want to pay cash and not go into debt. I don't think that's radically Christian in by nature, but it can be if it's done in faithfulness to Christ, and so that it frees you to be generous, right? So that it frees you to have your eyes looking at Jesus for what you need, and for all the, you know, the promise of money gives you, what it promises is security, right? It promises you abundance. It promises you joy and contentment. But those are things that we only can find in Jesus, ultimately. That was one of your main points, and I love that point. But these are ways, I do think, they masquerade as something that they're not always. So I think it's appropriate you brought that out. So to be clear, no, you're not saying don't save.
No, I'm saying it. So another illustration that I used in a conversation with someone after the service was, you know, imagine if you asked me, like, if you noticed that you were concerned about, you know, how I was treating Lauren, and you said, you know, hey, how are you doing with loving your wife? And I said, oh, well, great. I provide for my family, and I take out the garbage, and I clean the kitchen every night. You would say, oh, that doesn't actually mean that you're loving your wife well. And that actually doing those things could serve as like the facade that under which my heart is hardening against my wife. Because as I do those things, I'm thinking like, well, she should be thankful, or she's not thankful enough, or whatever. Like, those kinds of things can be going underneath, even though I'm doing those things. But if I've equated in my mind, well, as long as I earn a paycheck and take care of things around the house, then that's what it means to love my wife. That's obviously not. And if we worked through that, then you wouldn't then say, so you need to stop providing for your family and stop taking the garbage out. That's not, you should do those things. I remember, was it John Piper a long time ago said, kind of asking the question of like, well, do I have to do this? And he said, that's like asking, you know, must I kiss my wife? And it's like this weird kind of just, the question is, what's the heart going on behind it? And so, by the way, it was really great to have that conversation after the service, because I was so thankful to this person for actually saying, hey, I was a little confused by this. Because first of all, I'm happy to admit that I can confuse people, and confusion in communication can happen because I don't word something the way that I wanted to, or you didn't hear it the way that it was, you know, intended, or I used an illustration that didn't make sense to you because you're not familiar with it. There's all kinds of reasons why you might say, oh, I don't understand that. Could be a theological concept you've never heard of and don't know. There's a lot of reasons. So I love it when somebody says, hey, I didn't really understand this. Like, help me clarify what you were actually saying there. And so at the end of that conversation, this person essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially said, oh, okay, so saving is good if done to glorify God, like in obedience to God and out of my love for him. But it can be a bad thing if I'm doing it as a way of trying to provide for myself or care for myself apart from God. And I was like, yes, that Awesome. I should have probably just said that. Like every time that happens, I always think like, oh, that was probably a better way to articulate that. But that's the point. The point that I was driving at all of that. And the same goes for that third point where I said, talked about the whole, you can't outgive God, and that twisting of that teaching. Because I have seen a lot of people struggle with that. They'll be generous, but then they won't get provided. They won't get back what they thought they were going to get back. So in other words, like a silly example, it's not even that silly, but an example might be, oh, I wanted to buy this house, but I gave money to the church. And then secretly I'm expecting that this other business deal I have going will be really successful and I'll be able to buy a bigger house. Like if I lay this down, I'll get something bigger and better. And when that doesn't happen, then people can sometimes feel like God didn't fulfill promises. We talk about this a lot, that people, a lot of people's anger against God is that he didn't fulfill promises that he never made. And so we think like, well, I started going to church, so my job should start going better. Or I started giving, so I should start earning more money or getting a better job or making more money. And that's not the transaction that God had. Like, God doesn't do that. And so we put that on him. And like, I just wanted to kind of call that out and say, that's actually a cover for your love of money, because you're still pursuing money. In the end, you're saying, well, what I really want is to get rich, and doing this God's way is the way to accomplish that. And now you're using Jesus as a servant in your pursuit of another God. And
which is a dangerous place to be, because then we end up almost like baptizing a sin, a heart sin of like greediness and never having enough. Jesus becomes a means to that end. And that flips everything, right? Upside down. Whereas money is meant to be a tool that we use to worship Jesus. And you did such a great job, Jave, unpacking what does it look like to grow in that, in the generosity and in a heart that clings and is attached to Jesus and not attached to, like, the example you just gave. Like if I give this much money in the offering, then I'll get this bigger house as a payback from God, because he'll give me what my heart really desires. And, you know, unfortunately in that moment, when we say it that way, we can tell, well, you're really settling there for something way less than what you could have in Jesus when you're giving your heart to that thing, when our heart is made for a person. But I think it's important to call it out because there are very religious ways of being greedy, you know, and that's one of them.
Oh, that would have been a good phrase. I should have said that.
Oh,
can I go back in time and say these are religious ways to worship money? I think that right there just makes the connection immediately to the Pharisees and everything. Mm-hmm. That this is religion, not the relationship we have with God. I also I thought about in Acts where it says that they receive these gifts with glad and generous hearts, and I've always loved that imagery, and that's really what we're getting at, is that then whatever God gives you, like whether you make a ton of money or you don't make very much, you're content because you're content with what you have, and your contentment is attached to Jesus, and he never leaves you or forsakes you. And so what that means is it's just, you're just a conduit. It just depends on how much of a conduit you are for actual giving, right? Like, so if you make more money, then you have more money to give and more ways to be generous in that. And if you make less, then you still get to be generous and give. And that's a great thing.
You know, it is. And it is, I mean, something I think we're, you know, a reason we need to be in community and talk about the last 2 weeks with each other. You know, like they're not typical conversations you're having casually, you know, about your marriage and your life with your spouse, but also with your money. But it's clear that we need help from each other and perspective. You know, just thinking about religious ways of being greedy, it's interesting. John 12 is the account where Mary anoints Jesus' feet with this expensive perfume, and Judas objects And his objection is that, hey, we could have sold that for a large sum of money and we could have given it to the poor. But then there's a comment that follows in John, and it says, actually, he was stealing money. And that's really what he wanted, was money. He wasn't really worried about poor people needing money and the waste of the perfume. And that's an example of it. I think it's so helpful and important that that's in the Bible as an example of what our heart can do. And actually appear to be very religious. Like, that could appear very spiritual. It's like, shouldn't we have sold that and given the money away? But actually, his heart wasn't really after that. His heart was after taking it for himself and using it on his own, you know, interests.
Yeah, why didn't I use that? That illustration should have been there, because you're right. Because I did have a little section that I ended up getting rid of that, where that would have really fit, of being gracious towards one another in community when it comes to these kinds of things, because it's very tempting. Like, let's say that I want to buy a new car, and I'm trying to hold it loosely, and I believe that God is saying, no, not right now. Don't, like, that's not what faithfulness looks like for you right now. And then I say, okay, and then you buy a car. And we can kind of get this feeling of like, well, because you bought this thing that I didn't feel like I could buy, now I can be judgmental towards you that you did that, which is what Judas is doing there. Like, but here's the thing, is if you're feeling that towards someone else, then that is a strong indicator that your heart is not content in Jesus. Because what it's saying then is, well, I gave up that thing. I didn't get that thing that would have made me happy, but you got to have that thing, that's not fair. And so either God like withheld something for me and I'm upset with God, or you disobeyed the rules, and that's not fair. I see that happen all the time. It is so hard to rejoice with other people and to be gracious to one another. And I think the picture of it, and I'm curious what you think about, like, how do you navigate those kinds of things? Because in community, the picture is that we would, as we're wrestling with those things, that we're praying for one another, that our friends are noticing what's happening to our heart. There's a big difference between if every day you come in and you're talking about like a particular mountain bike and you're just becoming fixated on it, and then you get it and Jess is like, I don't know why he bought that bike or whatever, like that, I'm probably going to ask a question about that. But it's not because you bought a mountain bike, it's because, hey brother, what's going on in your heart like that? Versus, you know, hey, I've all of a sudden, like, we got this gift of money or we got this refund or whatever, and Jess and I, like, we just thought, like, hey, this is the time, and I got this mountain bike, and I get to go enjoy it, and I receive it just as a gift. That is a different kind of heart posture. So how do we, like, I guess here's what I would ask you. You're the practical guy that actually helps people, and I just confuse people talk about big ideas. But, like, how do we do that? Because we are a mixed bag, right?
Yes, we are.
And I don't know about you, but I've definitely gotten in phases where I'll swing in these ditches where I've definitely gone through phases where I'm like, I shouldn't even buy a coffee from Starbucks because, like, that money, I start thinking like Judas, like that money could have been spent, you know, like on that someone else could have had it. Like, what help would you give to somebody who's just wrestling with those things and trying to separate what is like a love of money and what is just like an overfixation on it and kind of a creating of a law and not really living in freedom? Because what we want is to live in freedom in Christ. Christians should not be going around constantly stressing about whether they should have spent that dollar or not and being like super obsessed with that. Like, that's not what we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be people who actually can receive gifts gladly and joyfully and who give away generously.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why the community part is so vital for us. Like, we are, every single one of us lives with a certain level of self-deception. That's just a reality. Like, we do. And, you know, I don't know how else to say other than that, but I think then when we think about community with each other, especially around topics like this, I think it's going to be really important that what we think our role is in each other's life is very clear. So, and we've talked about this before, the different roles that we can play as we relate with each other as disciples. But I think often when it comes to things like this, we think primarily in terms of like the cop role, where we're kind of a rule enforcer and we want to tell you, yeah, you shouldn't have spent that. And we're just kind of like, as if there's a speed limit and you went over it. So that's kind of the role we often take. And we really need to go deeper. That's where we take the cardiologist role. And that's where we're really caring for each other's heart. And the only way you would know, like, that was a good example you gave with the bike and what's going on in a heart. The only way we will know that is if we are seeking prayerfully with the Spirit's help to discern and help each other discern what is happening in our heart. What is it that we are finding worthwhile and that we're valuing and that we're giving ourselves over to? You can actually end up worshiping sin avoidance, where your focus is like, I just can't do wrong. Well, not doing wrong is a good thing, but when that is your sole focus, that's not the same as doing what's good and right. It's just not. And I've had friends over my life where that has been an issue, and I have struggled with it, like where you can almost have a, like all of our consciences need to be recalibrated. I believe that's true. It's like one of those faculties God's given us, just like everything else that is broken and needs recalibration. But sometimes for some people, their wiring, they actually have an overactive and an oversensitive conscience where they think they're doing wrong. When you talk with them through it, they're actually not. But that's just because they're living on edge. Like you said, they're not really living in the freedom that they have in Jesus. It's still like constant worry about self-justification. That's one of the things that can happen. So I do think one of the ways out, though, is to dialogue with people about that, to talk with close friends, brothers and sisters in Christ, and to really seek to be a cardiologist. And here's the thing. None of us know what is actually happening in another person's heart until they tell us. And even when they tell us, I don't know about you, Jay, but I sometimes can't fully describe what's happening inside of me. That's just hard. And especially around something like money, it can be really like we have multiple levels of motivations and fears. But I don't see another way forward other than that we work together with the Spirit's help. I would say one thing that we are always going to be in danger if we just get isolated on this and we think the way I do it is right and no one's going to question that. And I'm not going to talk with that. That's just a dangerous place to be. And I would just caution people from that. But like, I love that example too, where for two different people, one purchase might be right for one and not for another based on what's happening within. And that's where laws can be dangerous for us when we give each other laws, because it might not be the case.
No, it might not. And I love just that, like of talking about it, obviously talking with God about it. I've said before that it was a big moment of change in my life and growth when I started actually telling God all the things that I wanted, even though I felt silly, because then he shapes my heart around that and kind of exposes my own justification. So I love what you said there about we need to always understand that we have a degree of self-deception and sin is present in us. So we're never going, if you ever find yourself going, I want this with totally pure motives, well, then you're already in trouble. So like, first acknowledge there's going to be self-deception, and that self-deception comes in with justifying things. And we love to justify things. Like, there's always, you can find a justification. I'm really good at that. So if you ever need help justifying something, like I can help you do that. But here's something that has been helpful to me is to just for a second, whenever I want something or whenever I want to spend money on something, whether it's a vacation or a vehicle or anything, the thing I want to sit in is the reality that I'm going to, my flesh is going to be prone to deception and justification. And also the reality that God does not withhold any good thing from me. That reality, because I think we paint God sometimes as this stingy father who is just like, oh, for crying out loud, like, am I not enough? Like, do you, you know, I told you to be content with your food and your clothing, and now here you want this other thing, and like, okay, fine, you can have that. And we look for it as like permission from God rather than an intentional blessing and gift from God. God doesn't withhold any good thing. Like we see in scripture that how he who did not withhold his own son, how much, you know, how will he not with him give us graciously give us all things? Like he's not, his track record with us is extravagant generosity. So that means when I want something, I don't have to be afraid. I'm not going to miss out on something. I'm not going to, like, I don't need to advocate for myself in front of God. That's a big deal, because then what that allows is, because I think most of us would say, any of us who are wanting to follow Jesus would say, well, I don't want to do something dumb with my money. Most of us would say that. And we'd say that if an angel of the Lord came down and said, don't buy that hamburger, I'm going to like, okay, I'm not buying the hamburger. But it's just such a stew of deception, and it starts, you know, kind of getting tangled. And so I've just found that bringing people in, bringing God into that, telling him, laying that out and saying, God, you already know my heart. So you know better. Like, this is the thing. God knows better than I do what parts of me are being deceptive and what parts aren't. And then that also allows me to be free in that, because what will happen is we'll tend to then go into ditches where we believe ourselves too much, and the other ditch where we think everything that's coming out of us is a lie. So we'll swing, you know, so for example, we'll get to a place where like, oh, I've justified this purchase or this thing, and so it's good. It's good, and I've declared it good because I've justified it in my mind. But then we can go into the other ditch where even when God is trying to give us a good gift, we aren't able to receive it because you're like, well, I probably shouldn't have that, and I probably shouldn't do that, and we probably shouldn't like spend money on that or whatever. And it's just bad both ways, because we'll end up taking something and not having the blessing of it being a gift from our loving Father because we feel like we deserve it, which always sucks the joy out of any gift. I mean, imagine giving a gift to your child for their birthday and they just grab it out of your hands and like, oh, good, because I deserve this. And then they just walk off. Like, there's no joy. There's no joy in that. But also imagine trying to give your kid a birthday gift and they just say, no, I shouldn't have that. I don't want it. I don't want it. There's no joy in that either. The freedom comes in receiving the gift that God has for you and trusting that unlike earthly fathers, he is perfect and he only gives good gifts and he doesn't withhold a single good thing from us. And so where else would you want to be rather than just bringing it before him and having other brothers and sisters helping you discern like, oh, does this seem like this is a gift from the Lord or does it feel like it's something that you're trying to grab? And at the end, that's really the question in any of these things, whether it's a vacation or a dinner at Culver's, like, is this a gift from the Lord or is this something that I'm grasping? And the only way to know that is to just be abiding in Christ and to be thinking with a renewed mind and a renewed heart and giving thanks, you know, like, and I know that I was pausing there, but I would end with this thinking in my life, if it's something that it feels like it's from the Lord, that gift stirs me to worship God for the greater gifts beyond that. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if I go on vacation and get away and have rest, the thought of that vacation stirs my heart of how God is giving me rest all the time. And what a gift that is. And so I see the vacation as the lesser thing, but the thing that kind of points to this thing that my heart is worshiping God, like, you know, thanksgiving to God for all the rest that he gives. And I don't need this vacation to do that, but he is such a kind father that he gives that to me, as opposed to I deserve this vacation. And thinking about it just makes me feel like a lack of satisfaction or like, or I need more, I need to, and we have to go here, we have to do this. Does that make sense of like that kind of fixation and where my heart goes and my mind goes?
It does, because you could also add to that, I think like, well, maybe I'm not getting this because I haven't been good enough yet. And so then my obedience ends up being motivated because I want some good gift from God. And that gets twisted pretty quickly in our hearts. You know, we end up in the situation that Judas was in, right? Like claiming that he wanted to sell the perfume and give it to the poor, but he actually just wanted it for himself, the money from it. And yeah, I think there God intends for us to live in freedom and enjoy and delight in him. And he will give us what is really good for us. And I think you touched on this earlier, Jay. The challenge, I think one of the challenges we face with money is the reality of difference and comparison. I just think that's really hard for us as human beings to grapple with that. When we want something and someone else has it, or we have something that someone else wants, that comparison and then the jealousy and the desire that goes into that is what where our hearts go so wrong so quickly. And I think that's why this is money is talked about so much in the New Testament and throughout the whole Bible, right? Because it has such control over something that is so deep within us. And I just love too that in your sermon you were calling out like we are made for a person. And we will find the fulfillment of all the desires that he has put in us in him and him alone. And he is a loving father, a gracious God who gives us what we need. I mean, it's the picture of Psalm 23, right? The Lord is my shepherd. I shall lack no good thing. That is what is true about us. And that's what reality is. So much of what discipleship of Jesus to Jesus is learning the reality of that in our life, learning to experience that I am a sheep with a good shepherd who anticipates my needs before I do, who meets my needs before I know to ask, and loves doing it all the time. You know, not begrudgingly. Like that was a good example too, where it's not like he's like, okay, fine, here. It's always overflowing joy and love and generosity from him to us. And we are sheep that are well cared for, and we don't lack any good thing. The challenge though is that we feel like we do. We feel like right. We lack.
And so we try to measure that. I was just thinking about this, that sometimes it'll get communicated that God gives you everything you need, not everything you want. And I don't think that's helpful, because the reality is he also gives us everything we want. We just don't always know what we want. You know, you don't have to go very far to see, like watch a 2 or 3 year old and see that what they want. Or, you know, I was thinking about this, we have a lot of babies right now in our church, and I remember when my kids were babies that they would be so tired that they wouldn't go to sleep. Like they couldn't understand like that what they really wanted was to rest, but they didn't understand it. They thought what they wanted was, you know, to be held or whatever. And there's that funny stage where babies will pull themselves up in the crib and they can't lay themselves back down. Like, I don't know if your kids went through that.
But like stuck standing.
They get stuck standing and they're so tired and they can't. And you're just like, oh, for crying. And I remember so often with my kids just being like, just go to sleep. Like, you will be so much happier. You will be so, you'll feel so much better. But we misdiagnose those things. We think that what we want is this surface thing, but it's not. And I tried to touch on that of whatever it is that you want. It is an image of a deeper desire. And so I think the better theological way to think of it is I'm going to be content. Scripture definitely tells us there's a few places where it tells us to be content with basic needs being met. But that isn't to say, because that's you should be thankful for that and you know, you shouldn't get greedy. That's not the point of that. The point is, listen, these things that you have, like be content with these material things. And God is going to bless you all these other things. Like you seek first the kingdom, all these other things will be added unto you. Everything that you really want, intimacy, meaning, purpose, peace, joy, those are all, like God gives all of those abundantly and generously and extravagantly if we just believe him. And so I think that the better thing is just what you were talking about of understanding, just acknowledging self-deception and our how prone we are to mistaking the thing that we want with what the desire that is actually being fulfilled, right? So we attach this desire that I have to this thing, whether that's attaching my desire for intimacy to a relationship or my desire for security to a savings account, or my desire for meaning and fulfillment to a house and a family that looks a certain way or anything like that, we attach the deeper desire to an external temporary thing. And every time that happens, it, you know, it causes pain and grief because that thing doesn't actually fulfill the deeper desire. The way it's designed is that we go to Christ for our, that deeper desire. And then he gives us, God gives us material temporary things here on earth as gifts, as a reminder to point to the greater thing. Just like when I give my kids a gift on their birthday, it is not, that is not my love. Like giving them a gift is not, that is not my love. That is not the what they actually desire, but it is a gift in light of my love. It is meant to be a reminder of, hey, I know you, I love you, I love seeing you happy and excited about things. That's what the point is. And if a child ever just said, well, no, I need a gift because that's what I'm actually going after, you'd say, oh man, you're missing out. Like the real thing is you want this great relationship with your parents, and that gift is just meant to be an illustration of it. And by the way, if we do that, if we receive that, then when we have the opportunity to take the vacation or do the thing or whatever, we get to receive it as a gift, and it's so much better. But it also allows us to rejoice with other people, because if that gift is meant to remind me about God's rest, for example, and how we have rest in Jesus, and I can be at peace even in the midst of a storm, then the cool thing is when you get to go on a vacation, I also have my heart stirred to the God of rest and experiencing that rest in him. And look, I will tell you, I'm a mixed bag like everybody else. There have been times where I have been envious of somebody that they get to go on a vacation or get to go do something. But I've also experienced the beauty of being able to rejoice when somebody is getting to go and do that. And I would say that by the grace of God, more and more, that's where I am. So like when you get to go do a cool vacation or go get rest, I'm so thankful that you get to go do that. And it's a reminder, it stirs my heart to both remember gifts of rest that God has given me and the fact that I have all the rest that I need right now. The reality that I can rest in Christ right now in this moment, regardless of whether I'm sitting on a beach or on a boat or whatever, or if I'm sitting in my office.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you have that, the gift of that, I think that's contentment, right? It's the gift of really knowing in your experience that you are well cared for. You're able then to bless others and encourage others and rejoice with others when you see them being well cared for because you love them, you know? And it's quite a gift, actually, to not feel like through gritted teeth you have to celebrate some success or some new thing that someone else has. I do think that, you know, just going back to what you were saying a minute ago, I think that's why the imagery of idolatry can be so powerful and helpful. You know, like one of the examples you gave was just the desire for security. And that is not a bad desire. That is a good desire. And it is so fascinating how something like money can become an idol that promises security, but it promises that security at great cost. Right? It demands your life. And the idol of money then says, hey, devote yourself to me. Focus on me. Put your energy into me and I will give you security. And it's a false promise, but it feels like so real. And I think the reason it's a powerful idea of and starting to becoming aware of where we have desires that are not really being fulfilled in idolatry, but we think they are, is that we can then get kind of below the surface and start asking the more helpful question is like, what do I actually really want? What is beneath this? Like if we find ourselves obsessing with money, a really helpful diagnostic tool can be just to start asking yourself or have someone else ask you, what is it that you feel like you will lack if you don't have it? Or what is it you feel like you will gain by getting it? And that might alert you to a deep desire that actually could be a very good thing that is meant to be redirected and fulfilled only in your creator, the one who made you, the one who is your really good shepherd or your father who gives you all the good gifts you need in your life. And he enjoys when you're enjoying those good gifts. So I think that's a really powerful tool. I think it can be something very useful in conversation, but then just in our own examination of our own hearts. And you can do that in other areas as well. Like when we were talking about marriage and relationships, that can become a similar idol, right? Where it promises intimacy in a way that is only meant to be fulfilled in God. But if you devote yourself to me, marriage, for example, then you'll have that thing that you want. That's the promise, you know, that's on offer. But these idols, while they consume our life and demand our worship and our allegiance, they never can actually deliver what they promise.
Yeah, so true. Let me just shift gears a little bit and ask this question. What about the person who's sitting there and saying, okay, I've really messed this up. And I don't trust that God is going to provide for me because I have not handled my money well. And so I get what you're saying, that if I'm faithful, like God, you know, God says, test me in this, you know, and about giving and, but I failed all those tests. So my lack of confidence that God, like, why would God provide for me? Like, will he fulfill that anyway? What do I do when I just feel like I've messed this up, and now I'm in a situation where maybe I have a lot of debt. I'm not giving because I just don't even see where that could come from. And so because of all that, I've basically abandoned all this. So I have no choice but to just try to do it on my own because I haven't been faithful at all. So I don't trust that God is going to provide.
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd recommend is to be thankful. And that might sound really weird, but coming to the end of yourself and realizing, like, wow, I've done this in a way that is not good is a very good thing. That's a really good thing. That's God's grace to us. Like, I don't think that happens to a human heart unless his grace is active. So start with being thankful. And then I would say,
wait, can we just pause on that for a second? Like, I don't want to break your train of thought, but that is, I wasn't expecting that, but I just think, oh yeah, like, we don't realize what a gift it is that we feel conviction.
That even though we don't like it, right? It's painful. I'm not saying it's like easy, but
what a gift that is. That should tell you that your Father is near. Like, the Holy mm-hmm. Spirit is in you and is convicting you. That is a good sign. That is a really good thing. So I think
the reason that's important to be thankful is we're in that moment, we're acknowledging, like, it wasn't because I'm so clever or so great or good that I figured this out. God, I'm coming back to you. Pat me on the back. It's like, no, he loves us that much. And you think of the Luke 15 parable of the prodigal son, right? Who wanted wealth. He wanted his father's possessions, went away, spent it all horribly. What does he do? He doesn't think that there's really any place for him back in the family, right? He's going to come back, and the offer he's going to make to his father is, make me one of your hired servants, because at least my life is better as your servant. I know I can't be your son anymore. And what you described, Jay, I think is a person who's at that place, who's like, this has not gone well. I don't deserve to be a son or a daughter. What do I do? And I think the first thing is to acknowledge that he is like waiting there, gazing and, you know, wanting you to come to him with this. He is ready and able and loves your repentance. So that's the other thing, is that we repent, we turn from it. So we turn from the way we have been living with it, and we get help, right, doing that. I think we need help from each other to know how to do that. But we turn from the way we've misused money in our worship of it towards him. And then we take small act steps of faithfulness to start to put that thing in the right place. We don't tame it. I love that you said that in the sermon. We don't tame these things. We actually kill them. We put them to death. And then money starts taking on the role in our life that God intends for it to, right? As an object that we worship him with, not that we worship for its own good. And it might feel like hopeless at first. I want to acknowledge that feeling is real. And that could be, from a human perspective, what things look like. But from a God perspective, there's miraculous things happening in those moments. And so that's where it might be helpful to have a distinction between change and growth. So change is what happens when what the way we've been living in a certain area shifts direction. So we have to change. And God does that by his Spirit. Growth is when we're already headed in the right direction and we mature in that. And both things have to happen for every single one of us with money, change and growth. So no matter where we are, even if right now we feel like I've kind of got this, I feel like I'm depending on God with it. Obviously I need his grace in it. Like if that's where you are, then I would encourage you, keep going, grow in it, become more and more generous, become more and more free of the love of money and it's all the strings that are attached to that. But if right now you're at the point of realizing, man, I need to like turn the direction I'm walking right now is away from his desire for me. I need to turn towards him. That's the place you start. And then that little act of faithfulness in response again to his love, he will take that and he'll keep doing good things in you through that. What would you add, Jay? I mean,
well, I don't know if I would add, I would say, I love that distinction. That's an important distinction between change and growth. And I would say that when that change happens, growth doesn't start with making up for what you've done wrong. So sometimes we can think like, oh, I've been going down this wrong road. And we'll talk about, well, repentance is turning. And what God cares about is your direction. But it'd be like, you know, you feel like, oh, I've been going the wrong way. I was supposed to go south on 41 and I went north on 41 and now I'm like up at Lake Superior and I don't know, like now I turned, but now I got to go all the way back to even get back to where I was supposed to start. The supernatural thing that happens is when we turn, Jesus is right there. We're already back at the place of starting the positive road of faithfulness and journey. Now there might be worldly consequences. So that can be a case. If you build up a lot of consumer debt, it's not like, oh, now I turn and now that debt is gone. But God's posture towards you is not any different based on how much debt you built up or not. So I would say that turning is like God is delighted in that. That his posture towards you, like read Luke 15. Yes, read the prodigal son. See his posture towards the son. He did not give the son like, okay, well, you now give me a few months and then we'll see how this works out. It's immediate. His generosity is immediate. And that's wild for us to think. Because we don't function that way. So we can't understand. And then I'd say, get some help to figure out. There's no law. So like, there are ideas. I could give people ideas. Like, number one might be to sacrificially figure out how you're going to pay off debt. Another thing could be to figure out, okay, well, what can I give right now? And I'm going to start giving. Another thing might be that you look around and you're like, wow, we made some purchases we shouldn't have made. And you sell them and either use that money to pay off debt or give that money away. There's a lot of different tangible things you might be able to do, but that's where getting help can be a good thing. I've counseled people in that situation before where they just like, they want to get rid of their things. Maybe they bought some things that they now, it just makes them sick every time they look at it. And it's just such a stumbling block. And we just say, just sell it. It doesn't matter if you take a huge hit, just sell it, get rid of it. So that you can move forward. But there might be other times where you say, that's not the wisest situation right now. Now is probably the best thing is that you keep that, you know, because if you sell that, you're going to have to replace it and you can't really replace it, like whatever. But it's a heart issue. It's not a dollar issue. So you can't just boil it down to, well, what's the best financial decision, like a dollar amount? It's what's going on in your heart and where are you going to experience some freedom and joy and peace. And it's just, there's just no, you know, so sometimes people talk about like, well, start giving 10% right away. Well, maybe. And then other times I've heard people say like, we'll start with 1% and then just start growing that every year. Maybe. But we can't say that as a one size fits all for all those approaches. What we can do is say, here are some ideas if you're in those situations. But the best thing then is to express that to God and to have some trusted people who can help you think through that and can ask heart, like you said, the cardiologist thing and ask heart level questions and confronting fears and confronting like desires of like, so if you think, oh, I probably should sell that, but if I sell that, then XYZ will happen. Well, that might be an indicator that maybe you should get rid of that, because you need to see that God's got you. He's not gonna, like, he's gonna provide for you. Or there, like, you still have kind of this idolatry left over, and you know that by getting rid of this other thing, you're really sacrificing that idol, and that's just too scary because you still want that idol to be around. You just have to, those are just heart level issues.
Yeah, Jay, was there anything else that, you know, from the sermon or anything else that you felt like you didn't have time to get into on Sunday that you wanted to cover?
I mean, I think those are the big things. I wanted to do the disclaimer. I wanted to talk about, like, this is, again, going back to that gracious, being gracious with one another. That's the culture that we want. Like, we want a culture where we care about one another's hearts, and then we don't judge external, you know, things that are gray area type stuff. And, you know, that happens, like I said, when we attach what God has done in us and we attach that to other people, when we attach desires with these external things, it happens when we assign motives and heart things in people to their actions based on what our heart motives would have been in that. I mean, all these things happen. But imagine a world where you knew that in a community that genuinely just cared about your heart, and so that when you receive good gifts from our Father, that they rejoice with you, and when you are pursuing an idol, that they would gently, you know, be able to be in your life enough that they could call you on that. What better place would you want to be? I mean, that's what we're aiming for. And that's a really beautiful picture. So that, I wanted to kind of cast a little bit of a vision, and I threw it out there as far as like what we could do with resources when we have that culture of generosity, and what we have been able to do in a culture of generosity, but also just a culture of people who are for one another's hearts. And like I said, be able to rejoice in God's good gifts, because there's nothing he withholds from me that he gives to you because he likes you better or because you're his favorite or anything like that. Like, he is just an extravagantly generous God who loves to give good gifts to his children that point to who he is. So yeah, I would say I think that's probably.
Well, amen to that.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine just what it would be like if we really did understand that God doesn't withhold any good thing, and that he really does want to give us the desires of our heart. He just knows what those are better than we do. And they are far beyond, you know, it's the old C.S. Lewis quote of that we are fooling about with these temporary things. And it's like, you know, being content with making mud pies in a slum because we don't know what it means to have a holiday at the sea.
Yeah, I love that picture so much. Yeah. I do think that is our struggle.
It is.
It always comes back to, do I trust him or not?
And do I see it?
Yep.
Do I see the treasure hidden in a field and see its value and its beauty? If I don't, then I'm not going to want it. It doesn't matter what law I create for myself. But that work of seeing that is a work of the Spirit. And so we want to help you in that. We don't want, like we've said, nobody should be doing this alone. Isolation is never the answer. Withdrawing and spending time alone with God is a good habit to be in solitude in that, but we're not meant to live the bulk of our life in that. And so we want to help you get connected. We want to be able to talk about these things. If you are struggling with financial things, you can talk to us about that. You don't need to hide in the darkness of that. You don't need to hide in any shame in that. We can bring that out into the light and see what is obedience to God look like. And you don't need to be afraid of that. And we want to help you. So you can email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com or talk to us on a Sunday after church. And we just want to walk with you in that. We hope that this has been helpful. As always, we appreciate you taking the time to listen. And until next time, grace and peace.